Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Next is an example of third-class poetry, avara, inferior. This is an example of inferior poetry. Urjat spurjayar garjanai vadivaha prodyat vidyud dhamma vidyotitagya adrav odrao Vidutag dragayante donti brandya singhasanga prakopan. Here we have only remarkableness of the sound, shabda vaichitriyam. And there is some sort of dwani here of a kind, but it just has no life to it. It doesn't awaken any chamatkar. So, this is avara. To be promoted, upgraded, it has to have remarkable sound and meaning. The meaning is nothing remarkable, so therefore it doesn't get upgraded. It's plain inferior poetry. What does it say? The subject is the clouds, the varivahas. They are racing, vidruta. It's past, passive, possible. It just means running. From mountain to mountain, the clouds are running. And there's some... Urjat spurjayar, with their powerful... wow, how do we translate spurja? Could you look up atopa? Cerebral tea, topa. Okay, so with their powerful puffing, swelling, clouds do that. And their garjanayar, their growling, roaring. And prajodita vidyudnama, the broadly, brightly manifested lightning bolts. By those, all the directions of the sky are illuminated or lit up. So quite graphic. And thus they're running from mountain to mountain. And dragayanti, let's see. That's a karmika verb. They're lengthening. What are they lengthening? Wait, I had this. Okay, they're increasing the kopan, the anger of the lions. They're making the lions more and more angry, stretching out the anger of the lions. Danti brantya, because these dark clouds are being mistaken by the lions to be elephants. Okay, so, lions don't like the elephants. And the elephants are playing around, but it's really the clouds. So they're making the lions anger more and more angry. Well, it's a very vivid description, but it doesn't have any spiritual significance. There's no rasa evoked. There is no rasa here. There's nothing going on spiritual. It's just some clouds and some lions, and the lions think the clouds are elephants. Very vivid use of language. Inferior poetry. Because there is... some minor suggestion here, and that is, what is it? Can someone identify the dwani here? Because to be inferior poetry is that the dwani doesn't create chamatkar. It's not, or in other words, the meaning that's suggested by the dwani is no more remarkable than the literal meaning, or maybe even less remarkable. There's some suggestion, but it doesn't raise the meaning to a higher level. It doesn't create more astonishment than the literal meaning does. What is the suggestion here? Without looking at the commentary. Well, the clouds are jumping from, erasing from mountain to mountain with their powerful puffing up in a powerful way and roaring and illuminating all the directions with their lightning bolts. They're increasing the anger of the lions because the lions think that this is elephants, not clouds. Clouds are dark blue and the elephants are the same color. I don't know the answer yet. I'm trying to play for time here and look for the answer. It's the rainy season. So what? It's the rainy season. No, because there are clouds, it's the rainy season. That's a simple inference. That's not much of a suggestion. Yes.
The city, that either means that imminently there's going to be very heavy rainfall.
Well, in context, that might be really significant. But we don't even know who we're talking about here. Besides, is this part of a bigger narration that involves somebody else than clouds and lions? Then that person may have a reason to be fearful. But we don't know the context. That might be a good answer, but we don't know the context, whether it fits or not. Even without knowing context, there is an identifiable suggestion here. You're giving me answers. I don't know if you're right yet until I pick it up again. It was here. Can you give me a second to find it in the commentary? I don't know. Yes, go ahead. What do you think it is?
That the clouds are running?
The clouds.
Are running.
So what?
Isn't that poetic uses? The sound of running? Legs to...
That would be called utpreksha. One kind of utpreksha where you ascribe living qualities to a non-living thing. But that's an ornament. That's not suggestion. That's just an ornament. But suggestion is the life air. What suggestion do we have here? If it's no suggestion, then it's dead. It's not poetry. If there's no suggestion. At least we should have some dwani, even if the dwani doesn't create any chatmatkar. Otherwise, it's not poetry at all. It doesn't, but I remember there was something here. Okay, let's try to find Dwani here. I don't think there's anything spiritual in this verse. I can't find anything spiritual about it. Literally, it's not quivering. That means lifeless. Oh. When you're alive, you may be sitting in one place, but you're wiggling. You're breathing and your heart is beating. That's spanda. It means life symptoms. Literally, it means quivering, but it means nishpanda means no life. Yeah, because it doesn't awaken any astonishment. But where's the dwani here? I guess it's just the suggestion that the clouds are very much... Yeah, the upama is suggested by the story. This is a alankar, an ornament that's not expressed, but it's implied by the story. Or not implied, but suggested by the story. The story is about the lions getting angry. Well, why are they getting angry, thinking there's elephants? Why do they think there's elephants? Well, that is the implied... Upama, upama, simile. The clouds are like elephants because they are dark blue and they roar like elephants roar. And therefore, because of that comparison, because of that similarity, but it isn't expressly said that the clouds are like elephants. So that's implied, that's suggested by the narration, by the idea of the story, by the ideas given us. That the lions get mad, that implies, and that they thought they were elephants. Well, the reason why they thought they were elephants is because of the similarity between dark roaring clouds and dark roaring elephants. Okay, and that's it's a bona fide suggestion. It is Dwani, but it's not Dwani. What does the Dwani do? It doesn't do anything, so it's dead. It doesn't stimulate any sense of wonder. You know, it's cute. It's remarkable use of words, but it's not poetry. Or it's not, I'm sorry, it is poetry, but it's not, it's the worst kind of poetry, inferior poetry. It's poetry because there is a Dwani. There is a suggestion there. Yes.
So we saw that Kavya Purusha has the rasa as his soul. Yes. So if this doesn't have rasa, then it's considered like a dead poetry, is it? It has a Dwani, I mean, it's a kind of a lower Dwani. Still, it doesn't have any rasa. Does it have even a material?
Well, the thing is, rasa, sometimes we can't identify it out of context. Rasa is the hardest thing to pick out. Unless you have a taste for rasa, you don't know. So this, anyway, this verse is out of context. In context, it might have been in a story, you know, the story, the whole story, the whole Prakarana may have had rasa in it. And this vivid, you know, picture of the clouds may fit the story. But by itself, it doesn't have any rasa. But it may be supportive of rasa that's expressed in the rest of the story. So, therefore, we shouldn't rule it out. I mean, yeah, there may be some rasa hidden there, but we don't see the rest of the context.
So here, alankara is being suggested. That means it's an alankara dhvani. Does it mean that there are other, like we saw previously, the dhvani, the rasa was suggested. Now alankara suggested, and there is a vastu also suggested. Are these three the major broad category of suggestions?
Well, why don't you wait until we study this? Rasa is suggested, but see, there is some dhvanis where you can analyze the steps sequence of suggestion, a sequence of suggestion. There are other dhvanis that you can't because it just goes, it's too complicated and it goes too far. The example is given, you take a needle and you shove it through a pile of 1,000 lotus petals. So you can't really describe, you know, when the needle went through each lotus petal. It happens too fast, almost immediately. So you just say it went through 1,000 lotus petals, but you don't try to analyze how it went through, when it went through each one. It's just beyond our, you know, we can't divide the time up that small. So like that, some dhvanis, like the dhvani of bhava or of rasa is too complicated to analyze. It's too fast and too complicated. It just happens almost instantaneously. So you cannot analyze into components one step at a time the evocation by dhvani of rasa. It's in that category of unanalyzable dhvanis. But the dhvani of the less important dhvanis of suggesting an idea and suggesting an ornament, which will further suggest a rasa, they can be analyzed, you know, into step-by-step procedures. So we have these subcategories of vastu dhvani and alankara dhvani for those dhvanis which can be analyzed. But rasa dhvanis are beyond analysis. They just happen. They're too subtle and complex to analyze. Yes. That will all be explained in chapter 3.
What was the suggestion in this verse?
Oh, the suggestion of the simile that the clouds are like elephants. It's almost obvious. You know, it's pretty obvious, but it's not literally said. The only thing is, it doesn't create any particular astonishment to discover that. You know, it's clever use of words, but it doesn't awaken any real deep emotions. So therefore, it's third-class poetry. Some 20 is there. Some kind of 20, but it's nothing remarkable. It's not a very amazing 20 anyway. It's a pretty obvious thing. And also, once you recognize it, it doesn't do anything for you. So that's the worst is an example of bad poetry. Yes, pardon.
Like if we take all the details that are mentioned in this verse as centered around this bhayanaka rasa, like
but who is the ashraya here? Who's afraid? We don't have anybody here to be afraid. We got anger. The lions are angry, but they're not even intelligent beings. So we don't have to have a rasa. You can have someone who has the rasa. You need the ashraya alambana. You know, you need that ingredient has to be there, and we don't have an identifiable alambana here.
Sometimes the description is directly to the audience. So when it's a description,
we're just trying to frighten the audience. Well, why don't we just pop a paper bag? No. But there has to be in the drama. There has to be someone who's experiencing the rasa, even if the audience also experiences it. In the story itself, someone has to be having a rasa. So there may be, out of context, this may be part of a bigger story that involves somebody. But just the verse by itself doesn't involve anybody. There's nobody here to have a rasa. Yes?
Is it about the rasa? Because to me it's another subject.
In two previous examples, we had very vivid the sense of twani in the verse itself, but in this verse it seems that it might be there if in context, for example, if we identify simha with lions, with some personalities, and clouds with some other personalities. So it
yes.
some rasa might be there,
some rasa may be there. There may be further dwanis hiding in other verses.
Yeah.
But we're studying for now those dwanis which are created by the particular words in the verse or a whole verse.
Mm-hmm.
You can also have prakarana dwani that's created by the whole bigger story. But that he won't even mention till the end of the second chapter.
Mm.
That's a, you know, first of all, it's harder to deal with. It's easier to focus on one verse at a time and the words in the verse. So we learn that first, and then we can recognize that there are other parts of a word can create dwani, individual phonemes can create dwani, and then the whole story, the whole prakarana can create dwani. But those are just mentioned. The detailed analysis is mostly of pada dwani and vakya dwani. Kishore Prabhu.
Poetry, but we are just looking at a particular verse. But if this is part of a larger, of a work,
yes.
I'm wondering, is it necessary for first class kavya for first class poetry to be full of dwani in every verse?
No.
Full
of dwani. There should be some dwani in every verse. Something.
Because I was thinking that verses like this can have a proper place in a work, like some.
Yes, it could. By having a proper context, it could. The verse itself, well, what you have then is a superior work with an inferior verse stuck in it.
Yeah.
The verse itself is nothing special. If you're going to have first class poetry, then every verse should be first class. Not that you can fill it out with some inferior verses. You shouldn't have to do that. Yeah, we can justify maybe it's in a bigger context, but why should a clunky verse be in a good context? There is an ornament called natural description, svabhavokti, and it means description of nature. A vivid description of nature is a particular ornament, and very often in mahakavyas you're supposed to have that, even though it's irrelevant to the story, strictly speaking. But it's an alankara. It's an ornament that is desirable, and even you're supposed to do it in Mahakavya, in a long narrative poem. You're supposed to have episodes of descriptions of nature. This could be part of a such a thing, but it's why have such a poor verse being used? Why not write better verses that actually stimulate spiritual emotions, even for your descriptions of nature? Just like in the Bhagavatam, there's the chapter description of autumn, the rainy season in autumn, that's full of svabhavokti. But it's each of those verses, you can find some spiritual significance in them. Yes. Yes.
For example, if the instance was when Krishna and Sudama were caught up in the forest in the rains, and then were caught up, they went to bring firewood from the forest, and they were caught up in the forest all night because of the rains. And describing that situation and that cyclone situation, if somebody were describing that with this, then
you could do it better. You could write a better verse that does that. A verse that actually has some spiritual value in itself. Not just, you got this piece of junk and you need to do something with it. Why just throw it away and get something better? you're right. It could be justified by being in a better context. But if you're in a better context, why not use a better verse?
Okay. So what's the sabda vaichitra here? What makes it a wonderful word?
I'll tell you
words.
What there is. I'm looking at the wrong one. Wait, I jumped two pages. Okay, let's see what the Shabda Alankars are here. You have some nice alliteration. I'm looking again at the wrong verse. You do have Ridge, the RJ repeated. That's alliteration. That's a Shabda Alankar. Oh, the RJ is doubled there, or three times in a row. Urjat, Spurja, Nagarja. That's a nice alliteration. That's a recognized ornament. Anuprasha. And then prodyad vidyudama vidyotita. That's another dya, three dyas. So that's nice alliteration. Adra, vadra, vidruta, and a lot of dras. They got three dras. So that's three times in a row. So that's good. That's good use of alliteration. And actually, the sound, it sounds nice. It just doesn't mean very much. So it is remarkable use of the sound. But it would be good if you had some deep meaning to go with it. Yes.
We were hearing that if something's got Shabda Alankaras and Acha Alankaras, it gets promoted a level. But this has just got Shabda.
No, it's not Alankaras necessarily.
Okay.
It's actually
ornaments of
there should
sound
be Chamatkar.
Right. Well, it's one thing it seems like he's saying here is like it's just got Shabda.
It should have Vaishishtya. Yeah. Vaishishtya really means the creation of Chamatkar.
Right.
And an ornament doesn't necessarily create any Chamatkar. It can be, an ornament can be also lifeless.
Right. Well, it kind of seems like he's taking it, he's kind of saying, well, it's just got some speciality of sound. It doesn't have any speciality of meaning, so it's not, it doesn't get promoted to the next level.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there's no Chamatkar. Even the Dwani here doesn't create any Chamatkar. Okay, let's try the next one. This is an example. Well, I won't tell you what it's an example of. Let's read it first and translate it, and then you tell me what category it fits in. I know, but don't read that. Don't tell us. Yata yasi swayameva ratna padakasyan veshanartam vana vanad Ayata si chirina kumalatanu klishta si hamat kriti shwaso dirgatarak sakanta kapadam vaksho mukam nirasam kate hvir asamanjasasaki katir durde rahat subravam. Okay, this is one gopi talking to another. You went yourself, Matkrite, for my sake, to go look for the padaka. Padaka is amulet or ornament on the, what do you call that? Not amulet necessarily. Pendant. You know, the thing you hang from your neck, decoration. That's a padaka. And I guess this one gopi lost it, and the other she sent the other gopi to go look for it in the forest. Vanad. So you went from forest to forest. Oh no, you went into the forest, and now you come back from the forest after a long time. Komalatu, and I know your body is very tender, and you are certainly distressed. Klishtasi, you've suffered some pain. Alas, for my sake. I see your shwaso dirgatara. You're breathing very long. Your breath is very long. That means you're breathing slowly. You're having a hard time breathing. Sakantaka padam vaksho. And your foot and your chest are full of thorns. Vaksho mukam. Amukam nirasam. And your mouth is all dried out. Why is this unbefitting embarrassment, my dear girlfriend? Katir dure rahak subravam. I guess you're saying two things. Why are you embarrassed? And it's not really suitable, my dear girlfriend, for young girls to go so far away by themselves or into the secluded part of the forest. Okay. Now, what you got going on, and I won't tell you. I won't begin to analyze it. What your impression, without anyone who hasn't looked, which kind of poetry is this? Which category? Why? Because it said so? No. Okay, can you have a reason? Sounds good. Well, okay. But do you see any symptom in here? Any reason why it would be considered Uttamottama? Because this is, you know, if you learn this, you're supposed to be able to identify when you see a verse which one it is. Matsipu.
Just guessing, I didn't read the commentary.
Okay.
Seems like when Saki sent a Saki to retrieve the pendant, but she was waylaid by a forest
the
bandit.
The one that got sent.
Yeah, the one that was sent was waylaid by a certain forest bandit, yes. Maybe Krishna. And the seems like the Saki's saying you've undertaken so much trouble for my sake, but she seems a little angry. I'm not sure. And that the chest is having scratch marks, obviously, from Krishna's nails. And
yes.
Maybe her mouth is dry because of too much kissing.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. That's
okay, now how is that Uttama, and not just Uttama?
Well, it didn't tell you any of that, but it didn't tell us any of those things that it's like that because...
Well, then you have very vivid and evocative 20.
Yeah,
but just to have dwani just makes it uttama. You have to have dwani coming from more dwani creating more dwani.
Oh.
You have to have echo of echo.
Oh, I see.
To have uttama. Unless you claim that it's upgradable because of the remarkableness of the sound and the meaning.
Right.
Either way.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the double echoes.
Okay. Well, okay, this is, of course, it's also remarkable sound and meaning, but this doesn't have to be upgraded because it's uttamottama in its own right, because there is the dwani that creates a whole cascade of dwanis. There's dvanis coming out of dvanis here. Yes.
The feeling of the gopi who actually sent her, like she's speaking as though she's happy with her, but actually she's not happy with her.
Right. Okay, that's pretty much it. That's like the second dvani, is that she's, this is what you call, Viroda dvani, when you're suggesting just the opposite of what you seem to be saying. I'm real happy with you, thank you very much. But actually you're furious at somebody. So that's Viroda dvani. Yeah, that is there. But let's see how Jiva Goswami explains it. Okay, the first dvani is that, and it's a dvani of an idea from the story. What we're told about the story suggests something else about the story. There's vastu suggested by vastu. Vastu means the story. The story is, you know, she's saying you went to the forest for me to get my earring, and you know these things happened to you. The suggested idea is that actually you didn't go to get my earring, you went to enjoy with Krishna. Okay. Now, we can pick out additional dvani based on this one, on the basis of the special nature of the vaktri prakriti in prakarana. Ah, I'm not sure what prakriti means here. Hold it. Oh, I see. It's the nature. It's the vaktri prakriti. It's the character, the nature of the speaker, and the prakarana, the context, the bigger story. On the basis of those two, then they become evident additional dvanis, as follows. See, the context is that actually the bigger story is that. This first gopi wanted to arrange intentionally that this second gopi meet with Krishna and enjoy with him. And she asked Srimati Radharani. She made some conspiracy with Srimati Radharani to arrange all this. That's suggested. Actually, Radharani suggested when Krishna's done enjoying with me, then this other gopi should be enjoyed by Krishna. This was Radharani's suggestion. This is implied or suggested. And then later, when that happened, and this gopi came back to meet the first gopi, to make her feel like she'd done something wrong, the first gopi is talking sarcastically with her. And by all this are implied the whole complex of bhavas that both of these, the first and second gopi, are feeling. So now we're getting to bhava dvani. This is deep, you know. We're not just suggesting an idea or an alankar. We're actually suggesting the ecstasies, the vyabhichari bhavas. And this is called bhava shabalyam, when you have an admixture, simultaneous admixture of different bhavas, or not necessarily simultaneously, but one after another, you know, one bhava after another. That's called bhava shabalyam. That's an important component of the rasa that's expressed in poetry. So the gopi who's speaking, the one who's telling the second gopi what she's feeling, what the bhavas that are in her are parihasa and avahita and asuya and others. These are all vyabhichara bhavas. Joking, concealment, and jealousy. And in the gopi who was sent, the bhavas that are being suggested but not explicitly mentioned are embarrassment, astonishment, anger, and so on. So there's many dvanis, like many little sprouts of dvanis, coming up out of this original dvani of the story. The dvani that you didn't really go to get to find the missing pendant. You went to enjoy with Krishna. But then there's implied, going deeper into the story, that actually this was arranged intentionally and Srimati Radharani was involved in the conspiracy. And then all these ecstasies are in the two gopis are being implied. The simultaneous combination of all these ecstasies. So that is uttamuttama. That's first, super excellent poetry. Yes.
I'm just trying to understand. On the part of the gopi that was sent into the forest, we have Sri Sadvasa Gopadi. Is it that she first became embarrassed because she had enjoyed with Krishna, but then she became astonished when she found out that it was all an arrangement?
She came back already embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah, when she, in the presence of the second gopi, she felt embarrassed. Then the gopi talked to her, congratulating her, and she was shocked, what is this? And then she realized that she's pulling my leg, and then she got angry. Right. So in that sequence.
Okay. And on the part of the on the part of the first gopi, we have Parihasa. Okay, that's clear how she's kind of making fun out of the whole thing. But avahitya, concealment?
Yeah, like, she's concealing that I really know what you that I'm saying this, but actually I know what actually happened. She's not saying that.
Okay.
So she's concealing her knowledge.
But then Asuya?
Pretending not to know what actually happened. Which that pretending not to know what actually happened is what's confusing the other gopi.
But why is the first gopi like jealous if she arranged it?
Well, because she didn't get to enjoy with Krishna. I don't know. Okay. I don't know what more to make out of that one. That's pretty much what Jiva and the commentary tell us.
Definitely a very nice verse.
Yeah. These are all original verses, even the bad ones, are original verses by Kavi Kronapur, written just for especially for the book. Okay. Here's another one. Don't look, you can look at the verse, but don't look at the rest. Navajala dara dama koti kama batara pranaya rasa yashura shri yashoda kishura aruna daruna dirga panga bangya kurangi kurangir eva nikela krishangira gingi krishangirangini twam kwayasi. This is a remarkable sound. There's alliteration and even repetition of whole words here. You have Yashoda and Yasho, fame, and then the name Yashoda. Anyway, a lot of alliteration here to good effect. Very remarkable sound, and also the meaning is deep. Well, Krishna is, is there a verb here to go with that subject? There's an instrument, there's a object, what's the verb? Yasi is second person, but the rest of the adjectives are referring to Krishna. It's just bhavati? Okay, Krishna is like this. So Krishna is... he's the incarnation, he's got the effulgence of a brand new dark rain cloud. And he's like he's the incarnation, figurative incarnation, of millions of cupids. That's a rupaka, where you don't say he's like millions of cupids, but he is the incarnation of millions of cupids. That's a metaphor.
Pranaya Rasa Yashoda. How does that go? He's just full of... Uda there means giving. He bestows the fame that comes from the rasa of pranaya, or madhurya rasa. I'm sorry, this is what? Well, ra from it's supposed to mean giving. It's giving fame. So he gives fame because of the rasa of pranaya, affection, or maybe that's madhurya rasa. And he's Sri Yashoda Kishora. He's the little boy of Mother Yashoda. Aruna Daruna Dirga Panga. How does that break up? I saw it. Arunat. Of which? Is that, is Krishna the subject of that? Yes, that's it. That's the verb. It's not he is, but he has captured or you know, what do you call it? Accosted. You know, stop the movement of the gopis, kurangir, those who have eyes like deers. Kurangi is a particular, some kind of female deers. Of course, it's not the eyes of the deers, it's the gopis who have eyes like the eyes of deers. So this is another, this is an implied simile. Upama. And he's doing that. How is he stopping them? Is he putting boulders in the road? No, he's stopping them with his apanga bunga, bungi, with the play of his sidelong glances. He's checking their motion. Aruna dirga, and those sidelong glances are broad and reddish and pinkish in color. Okay. And there's an iva there. I mean, it's just an iva for certainly. Certainly he's stopping these gopi, these doe-eyed gopis. Nikala Krishangi Rangini. This is evocative. Nikala Krishangi Rangini. I guess, oh girl whose entire body is emaciated. Krishna, or no, Krishangi, no, Krishna just means narrow. It just means a girl with a narrow waist. How's the Nikala fit in there? I guess you, girl, who give pleasure to all the slender waist girls. Twam Kwayasi, where are you going? Okay, this is Uttama Kavya by virtue of the dhwani. Let's see what the dhwani is. Can someone tell me what the dhwani is? What's being suggested here? Let's see. Okay. No, that's the artha. I'm sorry, I'm a little confused. What's the dhwani here?
Maybe because Krishna, he's such that he stopped all gopis, but this gopi, she managed to escape and to go, so it means that she conquered him. Even his power, she overpowered him. I don't know, but she overpowered him because she is able to go. I don't know, it's just a small suggestion.
I think it's something else. I see here the... This is, I see the Pallavas or the other 20s that sprout out of the first 20, but what's the first 20? Lakshyo Arta, that's not it. Vyangyo Arta, here. Okay, I got it. Okay, I see the analysis now. First of all, she's saying, where are you going? So it seems like she's saying, don't go. What's implied is, when you say, where are you going, that means you shouldn't be going where you're going. You shouldn't be going, is the implication. So that's the implied idea. This is not suggestion, but this is just implication, you know, logical implication. If you tell someone, where are you going, it's not just asking someone for information. You're actually telling them, don't go. So that's that lakshya, that's lakshana, that's figurative way of saying, hey, don't go, is to say, where are you going? That's very evocative, because it's awakening, an excitement in the what to speak of the gopi who it's told to, but even the people who hear about it, the people who listen to the poetry, it's exciting to hear this. What's going on? When this gopi says this, so the reader is his ears perk up. And there's a lot of amazement in the bare sound. It's full of such alliterations. And we automatically, we're offered an upgrade because the sound and the meaning are very remarkable. And then, what is the dhwani here? That is that, actually, I want you to go. It's saying the opposite of what, meaning the opposite of what you say. Because we're saying that Krishna is the incarnation of millions of Cupids. So I may be saying on the surface, don't go, but then I'm telling you all these things about Krishna that make you want to go. So actually the hidden meaning, the suggestive meaning is, go ahead. Go meet Krishna. That's the Vyangya Arta. Well, that's what he's saying. Yeah.
Maybe I got it wrong. In one sense, it seems like we have this description of how Krishna is waylaying or accosting all the doe-eyed gopis.
Just with his glances.
Just with his glances. And then the person asks, where are you going? As if she's escaping from that accostment. And then it seems like the suggestion is that you shouldn't go away. You should go to where the son of Yashoda is.
Where Krishna is, yeah. Anyway, that's the dhwani, is a suggestion that actually you should go and meet this Krishna, even though he may accost you on the way. Okay, so that's remarkable. That makes it uttama kavi, that the dhwani is very remarkable. Creates it actually stimulates an appreciation of the rasa in the reader. And because of the also stimulating nature of the sound and the meaning, it gets an upgrade. And beside that, there also are further dhwanis created from the first dhwani. And that is, especially when it says nava, by the word nava jala dada dhamma, his effulgence is like that of a dark rain cloud. Another suggestion is the idea that he's so effulgent that everything around him is going to seem dark in comparison, and so you can sneak off and nobody's going to see you because of the whole environment will be, everything will be dark because Krishna is so effulgent that everything will be blinded, and nobody will see you going to see, to meet Krishna. So don't be afraid of anybody, you know, getting angry at you, because they're not even going to see you. That's what Jiva Goswami says. Yeah. Maybe hard to pick out, but it's already upgraded. Even without that extra dwani created by the dwani, it's uttama uttama just because the sound and the meaning are so profound. Okay. Yes.
In the first line of the explanation, atra shabdarta vaichitrena vachyad, I'm just wondering what that word
is. Vachyad.
Yeah.
That means, that's part of the definition of the dwani being profound, is that the idea you get from the dwani is more remarkable than the literal idea, vachyad, than the literal idea. The suggested idea is more remarkable than, more stimulating than the, because if you have a suggestion, but what's suggested is no more amazing than what the literal meaning is, then it's not good dwani. It's weak dwani. That's nishpanda. To have some life in it, the dwani has to create some more astonishment than the literal meaning does. Okay, any other questions about that? Dharmadipur.
I don't know, maybe someone already asked before, but we're talking about astonishments, but for example, in Bhagavad Gita, we have many verses, simple verses, plain forward, plain instructions like yashastra vidimutsrija vartate kama karata, simple verses, no astonishments. Maybe some.
It depends. If someone thinks, it's just philosophy, but a pure devotee can be astonished hearing Krishna's philosophy. You know, Krishna's saying this, you know, that the soul will never die. You know what that really means? And the devotee just becomes astonished hearing it. It depends on what your attitude is. You could be astonished hearing that.
Okay.
Well, it's not that every verse in the Gita necessarily is a piece of poetry.
Because you mentioned
We're not claiming that. It says the Bhagavatam speaks in all three ways. It doesn't mean it speaks in all three ways all the time.
Because you mentioned that the high-class poetry.
Yes.
Every single verse is a high-class poetry. Just before, like
you mean every verse of the Gita?
No, I'm not saying about the Gita, but you mentioned that. But and if we say that Gita is a uttama uttama,
yeah, high class poetry, why should it have weak parts? Every single verse of it should be strong. There should be some remarkable dwani, some effective dwani in every verse. Some, but we'll study dwani. There's dwani can come up, can appear in many places. It can appear in the words, in the overall meaning. The dwani can be created just by an alankar, an ornament. So real poetry should have plenty of dwani, at least one dwani in each verse.
What about dwani, for example, like when Krishna mentions qualities of a self-realized titadir or a person who is self-realized, just qualities. So what is a dwani in such verses?
Maybe there isn't any. There isn't obvious dwani necessarily that all the audience would catch. Maybe only special people would feel anything. Astonishment. It's not necessarily so that every verse in the Bhagavad Gita is proper poetry. That's okay. It doesn't have to be. Because Krishna is speaking philosophy. It's not that philosophy has to be spoken in poetry. It's remarkable when philosophy is spoken in poetry, but it doesn't have to be. Not even the Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't have to all be poetry. Krishna didn't speak the Bhagavad Gita to give Arjuna an ascetic experience of rasa. He gave it and spoke to Bhagavad Gita to teach him something, teach him some philosophy. So it doesn't have to be poetry. Some of it is, but not necessarily every verse. Poetry is a particular use of language. It's not the only valid or the only transcendental use of language is poetry. You can have transcendental words that aren't poetry. Krishna himself didn't speak words that aren't poetry. It's a particular, a special mode of language. Yes. Okay. Vishnukanta and then Sarvika.
I suppose we saw the meaning is there and the explanation was given with respect to the context of the story. So is that Prakarana Dvani or just the verse itself gives that?
No, it's a Dvani. You're supposed to be aware of the context. But the Dvani is created in that context. The Dvani is created by the particular verse. The meaning of the particular verse. The story that's told in that verse. But it's inside the context of the whole story. You know, we have to be aware of the bigger context. But the Dvani, we give the verse the credit for creating the Dvani.
But if somebody is reading, they may not be aware of the whole story. They may just understand what is going here, like one gopi is sending another gopi.
Well, Jiva Goswami filled it in for us. He gave us the context in his explanation.
So before knowing the context, it's not possible to...
Yeah, right. If you take something out of context, you may not be able to understand exactly what all the effects of the verse if you take it out of context.
So, but when he was
it's
writing,
not recommended that we should normally read poetry out of context, but this is a textbook and he's giving us examples.
So he's giving the examples, assuming that the readers would have already gone through these...
No, but in this case, he's not assuming, he's giving us the context. He's filling in the missing context in the explanation that comes immediately after.
So in his vritti...
It's right there, in the vritti, he's telling us the context. And Vishwanath is filling in even anything that's missing from that. In this case... Other cases, it doesn't, you know, this case, the Dvani is dependent on the context. But other cases, it isn't. But in this case, they help us, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath, by telling us the context.
And this verse, Tvam Kva Yasi, is where you're going. So is that like, conventionally, you said that if somebody asks, where are you going, it means that don't go. Is that a conventionally accepted... because we also used to have that in art. I mean, in Kannada also, if they say, where are you going, it means like an inauspicious thing.
If you can be talking to a three-year-old child, and especially with the tone of voice, say, where are you going? The child is supposed to understand, you mean don't go. You know, it's not like, you know, where are you going? Well, I'm going to the store to buy some candy. Well, you're not going. You know, it's not sufficient just to answer where you're going. It means don't go. That's not even poetry. That's just ordinary use of language. Ordinary language also uses sometimes dvani, but it certainly uses implication, you know, hidden meanings, where what you're actually saying is not just literally what the words mean. Ordinary language uses those devices all the time, even non-poetic language.
So in this context, again, where they're going refers to don't go.
Just like if the mother speaks these words to the child, where are you going? You could say there's a dvani there, but it's not poetry because the mother is not a poet. She doesn't have the bija, so even if she throws a couple of dvanis into her words, it doesn't make it poetry.
So in this context, where are you going refers to don't go, and that creates the main dvani, is it? In this particular
That is the first dvani.
That is the first dvani.
But in this case, in the context of this story, that's got a lot of spiritual significance, because where she's going is to meet Krishna, not just to the candy store. So therefore, it awakens, it's an udipana of rasa, or of the appreciation of the rasa in the hearts of the audience.
But I don't understand. She's going to meet with Krishna. Then why we have to stop her going? Let her go. Then
yeah, but I know. But what that dvani is there, and then it's turned around again by the second dvani. You know, Krishna is like this, and he's like that. He's so wonderful. So when I say don't go, I really mean go. So it ends up when you have the dvani of the dvani that she's telling do go.
Can this be understood in a different context? Like when you explained the meaning, I felt a different kind of story. That all the gopis are around Krishna during the Rasa Leela. At that time, one gopi is trying to go somewhere else, and another gopi is saying, "Don't go,
Krishna has caught all the gopis by his sidelong glances. So why are you trying to go like that, he's asking.
Well, that's feasible, but here we've been told it's the story is something else. Okay.
Does it fit in this kind of context also?
It could, yeah. It could. And maybe it's, you know, the same verse could be used in a whole different poem with a whole different context. It means something else. It could. But that's for an expert poet to do. For the poet to judge that I could use the same verse and make it mean a whole different thing. You know, if he knows how to do it expertly, he could. Okay,
It actually was connected with Durmala Prabhu asked. So, and for example, in Bhagavad Gita we have this list of qualities of devotee being described by Krishna. So, and maybe there's some twani if we have some special combination of those qualities. Like we read that devotee he's like this and he's also like this. And in addition, he's like this. So
could be.
Can it create dvani also?
It could, but proper dvani should be intentional. You know, we shouldn't imagine there's a dvani when the author didn't mean to create one. Accidental dvanis don't count. If you can really show a good case that Krishna must have meant it, he must have intended this, then okay, then we can say, well, you know, these verses of the Bhagavad Gita are actually poetry. They're actually, you know, containing the elements of poetry. You could find it. Mm-hmm. But you'd have to have, you know, some evidence that Krishna meant to do that, not that it's just accidental.
Sometimes Krishna, what he does, he lists all those qualities and then he addresses to Krishna with some particular name, like Madhusudana, like Partha or something. And this quality, Partha, it invokes some quality for those personalities.
Yeah, like you call Krishna Madhusudana, killer of Madhu demon. And may you also kill the doubts in my heart.
Yeah, yeah.
That's poetic.
Yeah.
That's poetry.
Yeah. At the same time, if Krishna addresses to Arjuna and he asks, he tells that you're like this, you are a descendant of those great personalities.
And yeah, and you know, so Partha, you shouldn't be wanting to run away from the battle. Don't you remember you're the son of a family of heroes?
So is it also creating dvani?
Yes, that's dvani. That is dvani. That's poetical.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And I'm sure Krishna did it intentionally. Yeah, that's not just accidental.
Also in Bhagavatam, if we see, especially in 10th canto, many acharyas, they give very ecstatic meanings, like in Venu Gita, Gopi Gita and all. So everybody, they point out one particular thing which is not evident from the verse, but they all say the same thing. So should we understand that each of those, our acharyas, they are getting those dvanis independently, or is it that they are like following the footsteps of other acharyas and so stating the same thing?
It's more often that they're just repeating what some predecessor said or paraphrasing it.
But if they are
sometimes not, it may happen that accidentally all the acharyas come up with the same idea. But most of these commentaries were written at different times. So the ones that were written later were written with knowledge of the previous ones.
So if they are stating the same idea, then I mean, they would have been conscious of the fact that others would have been reading the previous. So why to state the same thing again? I mean, how would they think? Like, why should they state the same thing again if they had to say, like, if it's the same dhvani expressed, then...
Why should a later commentary just say make the same comment?
Yeah, others might be reading the old versions also.
Yeah, but manuscripts are rare. So Vishnu Chakravarti, I would say that Vishnu Chakravarti included so much verbatim excerpts of Sridhar Swami's commentary in his own commentary because everybody didn't have Sridhar Swami's commentary at that time. He really, you know, a good percentage of Vishnu Chakravarti's Bhagavatam commentary is just verbatim, you know, quotes from Sridhar Swami, or he repeats the same words. And one reason may be that his readers didn't have direct access to Sridhar Swami, they didn't have it in front of them. Why do you repeat so much? Because also he repeats and adds things. He modifies it. He adds words to it.
Well, it can be a sub-commentary to the previous Acharya's commentary also. They explaining their...
Right, but then, he would actually... But Vishnu does that a little bit, but he mostly just repeats and then adds something of his own. I wouldn't call Vishwanath, the way he does it, a sub-commentary on Sridhar. There's some other commentary that's a sub-commentary that elaborates on every, you know, on the major phrases of Sridhar. But Vishwanath doesn't do that so much. He'll just repeat and then add something of his own that's not directly a comment on Sridhar or something, but it's just adding some other realization of his own. Sometimes he gives a gloss, but not enough to call it a commentary on Sridhar Swami's commentary. Okay, we'll stop. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.